Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Saw Something Scary. Jeff Wright, Derek Zhu here with you on this beautiful Thursday. Jeff, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm kind of shot, honestly. If listeners don't know, I live in Middle Tennessee where some bad tornadoes hit, and my wife woke me up Tuesday morning at like 5-something in tears because some of our friends from school had been hit hard. They crawled out from under their house at 3 in the morning. And I feel like I've been running since then. And it's just tiresome. It's not about me. I mean, I'm glad to go help, but it's just been a lot of physical and emotional, toil the last couple of days.
For sure.
And, so the city has asked for no volunteers today so that they can get utility people in to restore electricity and gas. And, it's the first time I've really sat down, and I'm glad they did that, I guess, because it gives me a chance to do this podcast with you and just do something different than pick through people's lives, you know, and try to bag it up for them so they can take it home and clean it up. So anyway, that's kind of a, I guess, dramatic or melodramatic way to answer the question. I'm glad to be doing this podcast with you, but I also am, I'm looking forward to getting a good night's sleep soon.
Sure. Yeah, for sure, man. It's been a daunting week for Middle Tennessee. You know, I know that Nashville has gotten a lot of the publicity or the press due to it being Nashville. But, you know, I think that Cookeville, and maybe it's just because it's closer to home for you and I, but I feel like Cookeville got the worst end of it and without as much like fanfare. And I honestly know that that's not something that's not something you want to be known for or anything, but I just man, my heart goes out to everyone that's been affected. And you know, as we were talking off air, a friend of mine from school tragically passed away in the tornado. And so it's been a daunting week for sure, you know, and it sucks. For me, it sucks to be in Missouri and not be able to, you know, I would much rather be at home side by side with you helping people out.
Yeah, I know that's true. Yeah, it's not a scoreboard and it's certainly not a competition. You wouldn't wish it. But I think the last I heard anyway, I haven't read a lot of news just because I haven't been around the internet. You know, a lot of places in town, you can't even get cell service anymore.
Yeah.
But I think our body count is substantially higher for our little community. We have a higher body count than all of Nashville.
Yeah.
And you just, I mean, you feel in a community this size, that many deaths, you really connect to. Like you said, your friend is dead. Mm-hmm. My uncle's house got destroyed. A student that my wife and I are really close to who graduated a few years ago, her uncle and aunt died. Mm-hmm. Two people from our school. Like you just, I'm not saying people in Nashville don't feel it. It's just a bigger city.
Yeah.
So there is more disconnect because you can't know as many people in a little community like this. 17 deaths. I mean, I think like 80 people missing. I think they're still trying to find people, which is going to result in more deaths.
Right.
It's just super, you know, it's that 7 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
You're connected to, you're relationally connected to it in a way that is amplified in a small town, and it sucks. Nobody, I mean, it's not revelatory, but it sucks. It really does suck.
Yeah. On that front, I read that TBI said that there are no more missing persons.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm really thankful to hear that.
Yeah, I actually read that right before you and I got on this call together.
Good.
So that is something to be very thankful for. But yeah, man, you know, 17 people in a community like Cookeville. You know, I was telling a friend of mine last night here in town that like Cookeville for us was the big city, you know, and regardless, like, when you see stuff like this happen to your home state, it's terrible. But then when it happens to your home community, a place that you have spent so much of your life, it's even more devastating. And then to lose, you know, someone that you've been friends with basically your entire life, it's just, it's hard to put into words, you know, but, I woke up Tuesday morning. I woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning, just in a sudden panic for some reason, and checked my phone and started to see that like stuff had hit Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before it had hit Cookeville. And, you know, saw that some damage had happened in Nashville. And so I remember being like reaching out to some, you know, to most of my family live in the Nashville area, not in the town itself or in the city, but, in subsidiaries of the city, and just trying to make sure that my family was good. And then I went back to sleep, you know, maybe like 3:30, and woke up to hear about what had happened in Cookeville. And, and then reports just kept coming in that day about the craziness that had happened. You and I spoke, and I think at that time when you and I spoke, you were either had helped your friends or were in the process of helping your friend. I forget which one.
Yeah, I was taking a drink of water, because people from church, I had to check on them too. We're trying to coordinate. Sure. Are people okay? And anyway, I had taken a water break, and I thought I'll check my messages, and that's when I was texting with you.
Yeah. So it's been a crazy time. And, I think I speak for you and I both when I say that our thoughts and our prayers are with everyone that's been affected. Thankful that it wasn't worse.
Yeah, for sure.
It was bad, but it definitely could have wound up being worse than what it was. And so I'm thankful that that wasn't the case. And it's been beautiful to see how many people have stepped up in the Cookeville area on social media and donated time, like yourself, donated blood, things of that nature. There's an account at the First National Bank for my friend Amanda Cole. Mm-hmm. So people are already trying to donate to that. A mother is burying her 34-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
And that's not something that any parent should have to do. And so I'm hoping that enough people can donate that she doesn't feel that pain financially,
Right.
She's going to feel it every other way.
Yeah.
But
it buys her room to grieve.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And actually her mother and I, we spoke on the phone, or not on the phone, but we spoke through social media last night. And it was a rough, that's a rough conversation to have. So let's pivot, man.
Before we pivot, if our listeners are interested, I'll stick a link to a photo album that I don't know if you knew Chuck Sutherland or not. He was a year or two older than me. Did you know Chuck when we were in high school?
I did not.
Okay.
Well, but I've seen that photo album.
Yeah, he's an incredible photographer. He takes some of the most lovely pictures of our area. And, I was out that day that you and I were talking about us texting. I was out in the early morning hours working with my friend's house. And here came Chuck with his camera. And he was shaking up and he was asking people how he could help. But he was also taking pictures. And he's finally posted all that that stuff he collected with his camera. And if anybody's interested in looking at it, I think it's kind of the definitive archive of the data of what the tornadoes did to our town. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes if anybody wants to look at it.
Yeah, that would be great. It's definitely worth a look.
Sure. But now, feel free to pivot.
Yeah. Let's talk about some let's talk about some scary movies. We've already just talked about some horrible stuff, so let's talk more horror stuff here. We're going to be reviewing The Invisible Man today, and spoiler alert, but I'm actually really excited to talk about this movie with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like I've had that that joy in my voice for a few weeks now, so it's good to be able to talk to you about a good movie. But before we get to that, let's get to everyone's favorite part of the movie. Let's get to everyone's favorite part of the show.
Jeff hates trailers.
And Jeff, I've got two trailers for you, both for movies that are coming out fairly soon.
Okay, cool.
The first one I saw with the trailers to The Invisible Man. It's for a movie called Saint Maud. Have you heard of this?
Can I do my regularly scheduled AMC rant?
Yes, of course.
So I come into AMC to watch The Invisible Man. Nobody's there at the ticket counter. I go wait at concessions while the one person working waits on like three of us, and there's three other employees to my left just chatting.
Of course.
Finally get in the theater. I timed it to try to miss some of the trailers.
Right.
Get in the theater. It's surprisingly full, which made me think, oh, there's people interested in this movie. Just noting. The movie goes, the like crawl goes off the screen. Screen doesn't budge. Nothing kicks on. We're just sitting there in a silent theater. Eventually someone comes in and says, oh, hey, whoopsie, we got the wrong code for the movie. We've got to call corporate and get the right code. We'll get it started when we can. And You know,
I'm sorry, man. I shouldn't laugh at that, but my goodness.
It's Bush League. I mean, dude, we work there. Now, we did it with film stock, but you preview the movie, right, Derek?
Yeah.
And you preview the movie to make sure this crap doesn't happen when people who've paid come in to watch the movie and they've done so on a schedule.
Dude, to go off on a little rabbit trail on that, I had to put together and watch the ending of Pirates of the Caribbean 2. Because where they had put the cans, it had been raining that day, and where they had put the cans, our roof had leaked because that's what Carmike did. And the water, the rainwater had gotten onto the film, and they were like, we're going to have somebody put this together and watch it to make sure that it's okay. And so in the middle of the day, I had to put together the ending of a movie that I had been waiting on for 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
and watch it and try to figure out in context what the crap was going on. And like had to put up papers and stuff on the windows, you know, into the door so that nobody could see what was going on. A mom and her son walked in and I was like, yo, you don't want to be in here right now. This is and she was like, oh, OK, I'm sorry. And so, yeah, I mean, just to piggyback on what you're saying, like we used to do some quality control to make sure that things were OK. And now that it's all on digital, like that's ridiculous, man.
Yeah. I don't know how AMC bought Carmike and the resulting company is more Bush League.
Right.
Anyway, so they had some trailers at the beginning and I tried to read on my phone the whole time. So that was a super long way to say, I don't know, maybe I have seen it. But it was mostly an excuse to be like, hey, AMC, you continue to be terrible.
Yeah.
And I feel contractually obligated, not really contractually, my conscience is obligated to say that I know the manager at AMC, our local AMC.
Mm-hmm.
The theater was better before AMC bought it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe the failure of that theater is his fault. I think it's the corporate ninnies sitting on his shoulder making everything terrible.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And because AMC perpetually makes every movie looked dimmer. I don't think they have their brightness turned up correctly.
Yeah.
It affected a lot of viewing this movie. Like when she's, never mind. I'll save it. I'm salty. Tell me about St. Maud.
Hey, so can I shock your world real quick?
Yeah.
I have a complaint against Alamo Drafthouse.
Listen, pal. So actually, what that sounds like is my buddy who owns a Mercedes complaining about the remote start
right. When
my Honda blew a head gasket. I ain't gonna lie. Check your privilege.
I mean, yeah, that's fair. You're not wrong there. It's actually not against Alamo Drafthouse. It's against the two ladies that decided to sit right next to me when there was plenty of space open in the theater. I know some AMC's. Does Cookeville? They don't let you pick your seat now, do they?
No, they do not.
Okay, some AMC's have gotten to the point now where like you'll pick your seat. But I was at Alamo Drafthouse. It was like a 9:15 showing of The Invisible Man on a Sunday, right? So I'm thinking there's not going to be many people here. And there wasn't. But these two girls decided that they were going to pick the seats right next to mine. And then they were on their phone the entire time. They were talking the entire time. They were drinking and I want to preface by saying like I'm not opposed to drinking or anything like that, but just be like civil about it. Dude,
to obnoxious drinking.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
I'll take the heat, Derek. Send your hate tweets to me.
But it was just the most frustrating thing, and I was like, "Come on, man, this is like, this is my favorite theater in the
mm-hmm.
world.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing?" But I also didn't want to be the a-hole that like tattles on them. So I just dealt with it. I was just like, well, here we go. And luckily it wasn't the worst, but it was my worst experience at Alamo Drafthouse.
I'm telling you, the easiest thing in the world would be to install a keypad in the armrest
mm-hmm.
with a direction. And if you have troublemakers to your right, you hit the right button
mm-hmm.
and somewhere in the back, in the office, someone who's watching can say, you know what, here's where the trouble is. Send an usher in there to look and see to confirm.
Yeah.
And if they can confirm it, get those people out of there.
Yeah.
It's the easiest thing in the world. But even the very best theaters, for whatever reason, won't do it.
Yeah. I did get up to use the restroom at one point, and I kind of used the employee exit, and the server asked me, she said, is everything okay? And I was like, yeah, everything's fine. It's like, those girls are kind of unruly, but besides that, you know, everything's good. And when I came back from the restroom, which, I mean, there was maybe, I don't know, 30 minutes left in the movie, but when I came back, they were shockingly quiet after that. So I don't know if maybe they, like, somebody said something to them or what was going on, but it got a lot better after I maybe I just really need to pee. I don't know. Maybe that had something to do with it too. But anyway, let's talk about St. Maud. So
yeah, before we move on, I just want to say that's the horror movie theater experience of first world problems.
Yeah.
And me living out here in the third world makes me not particularly sensitive, pal.
It's fine. I understand.
But apparently St. Maud is involved somehow.
Yeah. I did just reserve a ticket for Scanner Darkly at Alamo Drafthouse on Monday.
I'm happy for my friend.
Look, man, when this podcast takes off and we're both billionaires, we're just going to open one and we're going to crush AMC.
100%.
So just always remember that. St. Maud.
Yes. I've heard about this.
Yes. Follows a pious nurse who becomes dangerously obsessed with saving the soul of her dying patient. And this movie looks effing crazy.
Huh. Okay. There's a lady who is a member of our church who works with hospice care, and she travels around to people who are sick and dying and just basically cares for them as they pass. And I think it's one of the most compassionate vocations. She very much sees it as a vocational calling. One of the most compassionate vocations that I've ever heard of because of the emotional toil it takes on her. She's not a cold person. She loves her patients deeply and she feels them pass, and it's all day, every day. You know what I mean?
So is she Dr. Sleep?
She's not like helping them see their wife and their kids play in the sandbox, but she does offer care at the bedside, you know?
Yeah.
And as you're giving me that description, it made me realize that this thing that I see is very rich with compassion and care. It's also pretty ripe for some horror, you know, like that seems like a rich vein to tap into.
Yeah. And the trailer is just, like I said, it's nuts. Maud, I guess, is very hyper religious, I guess would be the term for. Oh, I mean, pious is that's what was said in the synopsis there. I think that's a really great way of putting it. It's just really. I would tell you to watch it because I just remember watching it during the trailers for The Invisible Man and going, oh, I want to talk to Jeff about that trailer.
Okay, so you've seen the trailer. Is this my people? Is that what pious looks like? I mean, or is this the stereotype that I think people who aren't religious think about people like me?
Yeah, I think that's more of like a hyper version of what people think. I've never seen anyone in your church put nails in their shoe and then step on those nails and walk like this lady does in the trailer.
No, we've not done that. Maybe that's our new outreach.
Yeah, could be. It reminded me of in the Da Vinci Code when the albino monk like self-flagellates himself. Yeah. Is that the right word? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what it reminded me of.
Nice. Yeah. No, yeah. That's not quite our version of Christianity. So
yeah, that's not really your demographic, for sure. I've been to your church. I know your people, and this is definitely not them.
Well, when we have an outsider among us, we don't bring the snakes out. I told them to show you the best version.
That's where that hissing was coming from. I understand now. Yeah. So this movie comes out on April the 3rd. So, I mean, we're, a month away.
Dude, I'm going to totally check out this trailer. April 3rd.
I'm going to put both these trailers up in the Facebook group. So if you want to know more about St. Maud or the trailer that I'm about to talk about, go join the Facebook group if you haven't already. We saw something scary.
For sure.
The next one is also crazy, but dude, it hit me in all the feels. So let me introduce you to a movie called Psycho Gorman.
One word or two?
Two words. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Psycho and Gorman.
Okay.
The synopsis on it is this. Siblings Mimi and Luke unwittingly resurrect an ancient alien overlord. Using a magical amulet, they force the monster to obey their childish whims and accidentally attract a rogues gallery of intergalactic assassins to small town suburbia.
Huh.
So again, I'm gonna ask you to watch the trailer on this. It's definitely like a B movie, but it reminded me of Little Monsters.
So before you tell me anything else, can I just ask, is Nick Cage starring in this?
I wish.
Okay. Nick Cage.
Yeah, he would be the best Psycho Gorman.
Okay.
But unfortunately, he's not. Now, when I say it reminds me of Little Monsters, I mean it in like the most R-rated way.
Okay.
So there was a teaser trailer that came out, bloody disgusting. Put it up, and I'm sure that there's a YouTube link to it. Let's see. They put out a press release, if you'll indulge me. So let's see. The writer and director is Canadian cult filmmaker Stephen Kostansky, who did such films as Manborg, Leprechaun Returns, and The Void.
All right, baby.
Yeah. So
The Void is low key pretty good.
See,
I can't speak to Leprechaun 2. I can't remember. I've watched all those, but it eventually all bleeds together. But
yeah,
The Void's pretty good.
Kostansky says this: the core concept of PG, which is what they've shortened Psycho Gorman to, is something I've carried with me for as long as I could remember. What would it be like to have your own monster? As a kid, I was mesmerized by the relationship between John Connor and the T-800 in Terminator 2, and the way this relatable kid could suddenly have an awesome villain as his pal. I would fantasize about hanging out with the likes of Skeletor, Megatron, Cobra Commander, and every other Saturday morning cartoon villain. These characters always interested me more than the traditional heroes. He goes on to say, I love contrasting operatic space fantasy with suburban banality. This developed out of my love for low-budget genre films from the 80s and 90s like Masters of the Universe and Beastmaster 2, where budget constraints forced the filmmakers to set their epic stories in accessible real-world locations. And dude, this movie feels just like it was ripped out of the 80s.
Huh.
Like the trailer and just the look and the feel of it. I mean, he's definitely trying to hit those things.
Okay.
I know that there's going to be some blood in this thing, but I think it's going to be more cartoony blood than like the blood and guts that you wouldn't like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely it does. Yep.
I'm gonna put both these in the Facebook group and you guys can tell me what you think. But I watched it and I was like, that's goofy enough that I'm in on it.
Okay.
I want to see Psycho Gorman just to say that I've seen it.
Okay. Well, my buddy, I'm happy to take your recommendation on this, and I will be checking out this trailer as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm very excited. I think I've shared this story on the podcast before, but in case not, it's just another chance to laugh at my religious sensibilities. have I told you that when I was a kid, I can distinctly remember praying for the kind of traditional stuff that you would expect a kid to pray for, like, you know, my parents to be healthy and my dog to go to heaven. But that I also, like, for years prayed that God would make Transformers real.
No, you've never told me that before. That's awesome.
100%. I would like, look, my dad owns a lot of equipment because he's a farmer, grew up on in a farming family. And I would just pray that the Lord would turn one of them into a talking robot that could be my friend. and I mean, I probably did this long after it's age appropriate, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I am deeply on board with whatever his name is and his desire to have friends from the 80s cartoons that were basically toy commercials.
I love it. That's amazing. Yeah, it really did. Like, it hit me in those, like, 80s, you know, those 1980s, 1990s nostalgia, like, B-level movie feels. Sweet. So, yeah, I think it'll be – and it's just cool to see, like, two kids that have control of a murderous monster. And he looks like a combination of Jeepers Creepers and Lord Zedd from the Power Rangers.
Stop. I can only get so invested.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that this thing comes out next week.
Wow.
Yeah, the release date is on March the 13th. I don't know if it's going to be like I don't know if it's coming to America or not. So it's going to the South by Southwest Film Festival next week.
Oh, yeah.
So it won't be released for public consumption, you know, larger than that, but I'm going to keep a lookout for this thing, man. I'm actually just added it to my watch list on IMDb, so hopefully they can tell me when it's going to. You know, I don't know if it'll go streaming or if it'll make it to theaters or not. I'm not trying to rub this in on you, but the cool thing about Alamo Drafthouse is like movies like that will go there.
Yeah.
So
the cool thing is that's definitely the cool thing.
Yeah.
I guess now I'm regretting telling Bieber I wasn't going to go with him to South by Southwest this year. I wonder if it's too late to call him up and change my mind.
Yeah, you want to do that right now?
I'll do it after the show's over. He might not be up yet.
Yeah, it's probably smart. Yeah, it's true. It is early. Yeah. For him, anyway.
For him.
So, yeah, man, that does it for this week's edition of
Jeff Hates Trailers.
Just riffing off of that in a more serious way, even though we have closed the gate on the Horror Reporter, that concept doesn't sound all that different from at least my understanding of the Jewish concept of the Golem.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
Now, listen, I totally defer to any of our listeners who are Jewish lore experts, practice, you know, part of the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is that there is a mythology within Jewish communities about a rite where you can create a humanoid figure from clay and invest it with a sort of life that, you know, once this creature comes to, if not life, you know, to mobility, it can be deployed against your enemies. And that this is a fairly well-developed mythology in, you know, arising from Jewish communities.
Huh.
There was a horror movie that came out last year by this name that by Gollum, by the name Gollum, G-O-L-E-M, pretty sure, that played with the mythology. But, you know, the stuff I've read, it's all comparative religious studies stuff. So
yeah.
I don't even know how to track down primary sources to evaluate it. But basically the idea was, you know, Jewish people have suffered at the hands of various governments throughout the course of the year, and have been subject to a lot of racism and discrimination.
Mm.
And the Gollum story kind of developed as a, I don't want to say a fantasy, but some sort of cathartic story to say it would be nice to have weapons to use against those who oppress us and hunt us down and things like that.
Sure.
So I know that gets kind of serious, but the concept seems pretty close between my understanding anyway of the Jewish Golem and Psycho Gorman.
Yeah.
Anyway, listener, if you know more about that stuff than I do, we'd love to hear from you. Tell me if I'm right, wrong, what I missed.
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to hear from that too. So, yeah, let us.
Yep.
For sure.
Well, buddy, I haven't any news today. Just haven't been scouring the interwebs
sure.
this week. So there will be no Horror Reporter this week.
Well, let's jump into, before we jump into the review, this isn't necessarily Horror Reporter, but we do a lot of sci-fi comic book things here. And have you taken a look at Batman Too Fast, Too Furious yet?
I saw the shots of the Batmobile last night as I was going to bed. I checked Twitter before I went to bed, and I saw them, man. It looks like an old-school muscle car.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm much more enthusiastic for the Batmobile than I am the Pattinson Batsuit.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you saw it or not, but, you know, there's a shot of him in the entire Batsuit in one of those shots of the car.
Oh, no, I was looking at the car.
Yeah, he doesn't look bad. Matter of fact, I'm going to send that to you right now, Jeff.
Okay.
So get ready for...
So Pattinson standing beside the car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, yeah, here we go. Yeah, I see what you're talking about. I legitimately looked at that shot and never saw him because I was looking at the front end of that car, which kind of makes me think of my favorite kind of muscle car are the Mopar muscle cars, the Dodge Chrysler Plymouths.
Mm-hmm.
And the car made me think of old school Mopar muscle cars. Yeah, He looks fine as Batman there. That's fine. Whatever. I'm still more enthusiastic about the car. I'm a sucker for Batmobiles.
Yeah.
I can't remember one that I thought was really terrible. Maybe the Schumacher one that looked like it had LEDs underneath it. But
yeah.
Other than that, I'm in on Batmobiles.
Yeah, man. I posted those pictures on Facebook yesterday and said something about I can't wait to see Batman fight the Rock in the Hobbs and Shaw sequel.
Yeah, that's really good. That's exactly what that car looks like.
Yeah. And somebody wrote back, well, thank God it's a car, not a gigantic tank. And would be like, first of all, how dare you?
100%. That person should be blocked and reported.
Yeah, they are. I'm still cautiously optimistic about this Batman movie.
Yeah, I'm very willing to join you in that. I mean, I'm going to watch it. Why not?
It's already
why not root for it?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it already has my money. You know, I remember very stubbornly saying out loud, I wouldn't go watch Batman versus Superman because I thought it looked horrible. And then I wound up having an IMAX ticket on opening night.
Yeah.
You know, so
gosh, man, that is my exact relationship to those films.
Yeah. So I just no longer say anything about it because I know that I'm eventually going to go watch it. So
I am basically Elizabeth Moss character in this movie. Two Batman movies, you know.
Yeah.
Batman is my Adrian. Or the people controlling his rights are my Adrian.
Yeah, well said.
I will say, this is momentous. Somebody mark this down and call the press. I'm going to say something good about my AMC theater.
Uh-oh.
They have a Batman game in the lobby.
Okay.
That my kids always want to play, and I admit, it looks awesome. But we never get a chance to because I forget to bring cash with me. But I took my son to see Sonic because my youngest son, he was fired up about some Sonic. And so me and him just went together to watch it, and I brought some dollar bills in and we played it. And it's basically, the game is you drive the Batmobile around Gotham doing missions.
Okay.
And you get to pick from like all of the Batmobiles from pop culture. And I ran out of time trying to pick the Batmobile because I wanted to play with every single one of them.
Oh, wow.
So the highlight of my local movie theater is actually not the movie theater itself, but the electricity it provides to a Batman game that I am into.
Yeah, I can't blame you there. Speaking of crappy AMC stuff, I guess we haven't talked about this, but I was in Cookeville. I was in Tennessee for, you know, several weeks at the beginning of the year, and I was in Cookeville one day passing through on my way to a show in Smithville, which we probably should do this off air, but have we talked about that Smithville show, you and I?
I don't think so.
Dude, I have to tell you, I have to fill you in on that because it may have been the worst show I've ever done. But anyway, so I'm driving through, and I was like, oh, I'll stop in. I've got some time to kill, so I'll go watch a movie. And Birds of Prey had come out that week, or the Harley Quinn story, or whatever they're calling that thing now.
Oh no!
And so I watched it.
Birds
I watched
of Prey
it there.
At the Cookeville Theater, for real.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my word.
Yeah. So I watched it there, and I was texting you during the previews. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, why are the lights still on?
Yep.
And I didn't understand why the lights stayed on through the entire trailers. And then I think like 5 minutes into the movie, they finally shut them off. I was not a fan of that movie. And the more that I've thought about it, I think that I need to go watch it in a theater that I know will treat me right to like watch it, because I was so zoned out on that movie because I was just like, this is terrible. I can't believe my friend Jeff has to go has to watch movies here.
Yep. I'm so sorry to hear that, dude. Yeah. Honestly, if you find yourself in that specific circumstance again, call me. I will let you into my office and you can watch something on my monitor in my office. And I will save you from having to go to the friggin' AMC of Cookeville, Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever do it again. Unless like for some reason you and I are gonna meet up and watch a movie or something. You know, I'll do it that way. But yeah, it was weird because that didn't happen when I went to see The Turning, because I saw The Turning at AMC Cookeville. And and that was fine. But yeah, for Birds of Prey, man, it was like a 2 o'clock showing or whatever. They just don't give an F till 7 o'clock, I guess.
Yeah, they do that stuff all the time, man. I don't know what the rhyme or the reason is behind it. There probably isn't one. But yeah, they leave the lights on forever. And I don't know why. Who knows? There's probably no good reason for it.
Yeah.
We've thoroughly flogged them. But listener, if you're tired of this, just imagine having to watch your movies in that environment. It's not fun.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that's about all the complaining that we can do on that. Real, let's jump into this thing, man. You were ready to pull on a string on the Invisible Man.
100%. Let's do it.
All right.
You want to get Mark in here?
Yeah, I was just about to say. Wahlberg!
What? No!
Spoiler alert. I guess I could try to go to South by Southwest with him. Do you think he still gets invited?
He's apparently going to have a match with AJ Styles at WrestleMania, so sure.
Huh, okay.
Or he's going to be involved in it somehow.
I'll check with him later then. Hey, Derek, can I tell you what the ultimate downside of a good movie like The Invisible Man is?
Yes.
I'm going to give you an analogy, and it may be one I've used here before, but I haven't slept a lot in several days, so forgive me, listener. I once watched a basketball game that Charles Barkley was commenting on. Mm-hmm. Normally he's in the studio, but this time he was doing like commentary on the play-by-play.
And it was terrible.
And it's actually pretty good. You know, Chuck's personality is one I dig. So there was a power forward who's one of the taller guys on the court. And back then, big guys weren't expected to shoot threes. This guy took a three and he made it. And Chuck said, that's a terrible shot. And the rest of the team was ragging on him. The rest of the commentary team was ragging on him. They said, Chuck, it went in. He said, yeah, but the fact it went in means he'll shoot it again in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So the invisible man is ultimately going to hurt me because I will keep going to February horror movies and they won't be as good as this movie, but I'll keep going, maybe it'll be like the invisible man instead of the turning.
Yeah.
And so this is a really good movie, but I think it's going to end up taking some pound of flesh from me.
Well, that's a fantastic analogy. I hate to know that might be the case, though.
We have a podcast for the same reason, but it's how I'm the horror uncle. I'll just show up being like, let's see the Invisible Man, and somebody will drop freaking Brahms 2 on me.
Do you know what's crazy is somebody asked me about Brahms 2 the other day, and I told him, I was like, for the life of me, I can't remember anything that happened in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Katie Holmes looked pensive.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. Like, I was just so upset with myself for having to watch that movie that I blocked it out of my memory. It is no longer in my head canon.
Ah, funny.
And I'm glad that movie was the worst. But anyway, this movie was, I don't want to say I was pleasantly surprised, but I think I was, man. Like, I expected mid-level, maybe even lower than that. Just because, let me ask you this. What's your relationship to Hollow Man?
I have probably watched Hollow Man twice.
Okay.
And it was fine. It's not been anything I've revisited in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the most recent version of the Invisible Man that we've gotten?
Yeah, that's the one that I can remember.
Yeah, okay. You asked that question for a reason. What are you looking at?
Well, just because I saw that movie once and I remember saying, like, I never have to watch this ever again.
Yeah, I think I've seen it twice.
Yeah. And so I was just curious to see like what you thought. And the reason I bring it up is because when you do a movie like The Invisible Man, it's easy to screw that up.
Yeah.
And I thought Hollow Man was a really shallow attempt, was a very hollow attempt at the Invisible Man. I grew up loving the old like 1930s movie.
Oh, really?
The Invisible Man. Yeah. I just thought it was the most amazing thing as a child. And, you know, how you prayed for Transformers. I remember being like, one day I'm going to figure out a way to make that cream to make myself disappear.
Mm-hmm.
So I was intrigued by this, and with Elizabeth Moss, who, again, like, I'm happy to see actors of her caliber come into this genre.
Yeah.
And to treat it with respect.
Uh-huh.
Because she's, I mean, I know we say this a lot, but this was a one-woman show.
Yep.
You know, I thought that the gentleman playing the guy that was helping her was great. I thought that in the limited performances, the Adrian was, you know, he did fine for what he did. I was really surprised with the brother, with Tom.
Look, he's in this movie, his performance was the most satisfying to me. Like, Elizabeth Moss really good, but Michael Dorman made me want to tear his throat out.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what that role needed. Like, he enhanced this movie by being that scummy.
Yes. Yes. 100%. And I agree with you. I think that he is, like, his performance is the one that I'll probably go back on and be like, man, he sold the show. But this really is Elizabeth Moss, like, acting around herself.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is not an easy thing to do. Where do you want to start on this thing, man?
Where you've gone is right. Elizabeth Moss is really great. I wasn't surprised that she's really great, you know. Dorman took me by surprise just because I'm not super familiar with his work.
I'm pretty sure he's like an Australian actor.
Okay. Well, that probably makes sense because I haven't seen a lot of that. I did think that Aldis Hodge, who played James, he was a little too bro for me. I thought it was a little simplistic, but not enough to drag the movie down. That's probably the only place I quibble with you. But on the whole, this movie was super well acted. And that's, I think, part of why the movie has resonated so well with audiences. They humanize this really scary sci-fi ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a credit to them.
Yeah. And you know, it tackles a lot of hot button issues that we have right now in the world with a grace that you could easily lose in the wrong hands.
Sure.
Which is crazy to me because the writer director of this thing is the dude that did the first Saw movie.
Yeah, but you know, he also did Upgrade, which I think I know I liked a lot. I think you did too.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't realize that he had done that movie.
He's growing. Like, he's now a director I want to pay attention to.
Yeah. Well, you know, but I'll say this. The original Saw is the best of the series.
Sure.
Because there was a story to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, there's the crazy Cary Elwes cutting his foot off. But it felt like that everything, like, it felt like the gore was there for a reason.
It served the story, right?
Right. And not for gore's sake.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
I don't know where... this guy, what's his name? Lee Whannell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where he falls off on the Saw spectrum. Like, I don't know if he did the second one or whatever the situation is. I know James Wan was the director. I don't know if Lee kept writing them or if James Wan just took over or whatever the situation is. But that one is the one that is like the one that is the most in depth and like down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else after that feels like Jason in space. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Jason X. And so maybe that's like his strength is stuff like this. I just, honest to goodness, just didn't expect it.
Yeah. He did Atmosphere really good. I say really good. Duh. That sounds very brain damaged. He built a very compelling, sinister atmosphere. And he didn't just do it visually. I thought the use of music was particularly well done in this film. And the stuff he didn't show us and didn't say enhanced it. So it's creepy to watch her get lifted in the air and drug around the room, right? Like, that's creepy. But you can't go there too quick. You need that scene of the knife vanishing.
Mm-hmm.
You need the stove being turned up and almost setting the house on fire. You need him standing on the blanket. And really, for me, the most effective thing, I think, in sort of building a sinister expectation was when she found his nest up in the attic.
Yeah.
With the cell phone and the polybagged knife he'd stolen and whatnot. That left a lot to the imagination.
Yeah.
And it worked really well for this because that's the inherent threat of the Invisible Man, right? You have to imagine he can strike from any angle at any time. And they leaned into it in the way they told the story.
Right. Yeah, I will say this, though, man. I don't understand why people don't turn the lights on.
Sure.
I feel like that I've made that note consciously over the last like 3 or 4 horror movies that I've watched where I'm like, you moron, why don't you turn a light on?
Yeah.
Like, why you gotta roam around in the dark? I don't get it. Speaking of when she finds the nest, that is a truly like tense moment where she dumps the paint and you finally see, like, for lack of a better word, the creature.
Yeah, man, I have that in my notes. I legitimately like jump back.
Yeah.
And I knew it was going to happen. Like, I knew something. She's crawling to the attic door opening. Something's going to happen there.
Right.
But, dude, it worked. And again, that's another time. If you get a chance to rewatch this, I think I'm right on this. That's a time when the music hits really hard in a way that super works.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a really well done scene. In fact, when we get to the end of our episode, that's going to be that's going to be why I answer yes to our seminal question.
Sure.
You talked about sort of the Invisible Man as a concept. I can tell you this. We've talked actually about this before. I get why every time somebody does an Invisible Man movie, it goes rapey. Because there's a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of men out there who, if they could turn invisible, they would go rapey. It's as obvious as the nose on your face that that's exactly what they do with a tech. I thought this movie owned that in a way that made it much more accessible, in such a way that I think the movie will actually maybe call attention to gaslighting and some of the stuff that maybe goes underappreciated in romantic relationships in our day.
Mm-hmm.
The contrast I'll give, do you remember in 2017, Shudder released a movie called Revenge, and it was like their big promo film?
I don't, but Shudder's dead to me. So
yeah. Well, so the story's pretty familiar. It's a beautiful young woman. She goes on a getaway with her boyfriend.
Okay.
Some of his friends show up. She ends up raped and left in the desert for dead.
My goodness.
And it's kind of this genre of movie. Last House on the Left, I Spit on Your Grave.
Mm-hmm.
And they're movies that I just never watch, even though they're standards of the genre. I have seen the original Last House on the Left. I don't know if I ever finished I Spit on Your Grave. I can't remember if I watched the newest Last House on the Left. I didn't make it beyond the Wikipedia page of revenge, I don't think. They all include these scenes of graphic, intense rape.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about it on the, I'm not paying money. I'm not interested in seeing that stuff depicted on screen.
Right.
I don't think you have to be a moral monster to watch it. I'm just saying there's nothing within me that wants to watch that.
Yeah.
And in fact, I do think that there's some problems with it because you and I both know those scenes are going to be cut out and stuck up on some porn version of YouTube. And dudes are going to go watch it not to be appalled,
yeah.
You know, without being, you know, I'm trying to be not gross, but I think there's some trouble with it. And I say all that to say, I appreciate that this movie is basically dealing with the same content, but they handled it with description and allusion without like dragging us through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that's going to open it up to an audience in a way that Revenge, Last House on the Left, whatnot, an audience, you know, a broader audience than those other movies would get. And it may end up actually serving women who are in crisis because people now are left thinking about the subject in a way that they can access without having to watch a 15-minute rape scene.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't want to minimize it again. That woman was suffering. Again, it's basically the same material. They just handled it really well in a way that audiences, I mean, this movie has made money and people are going to see it. Audiences are going to be more aware of this stuff. And Shudder's Revenge doesn't have that potential.
Yeah.
Because of the choices they made creatively.
Yeah. No, I agree with that for sure.
Were you bummed that Brother Luke was the bad guy?
No. I'm just happy to see him in stuff, man.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's insanely talented. And again, you know, it's not like we get a lot of him in this movie, but what we get of him in this movie, I was like, yeah, dude, I mean, show your chops.
Yeah. In fact, I almost couldn't buy him as the megalomaniacal manipulator because he does vulnerable so well. Like at the very end of the movie, when she comes for dinner, and he's kind of stammering around about how pretty she looks and his choices for dinner. But then all of a sudden it seems like a bad idea. Like I just saw Luke. I was like, oh, I love him.
Yeah.
If he hadn't said the surprise line at the very end there, I think I wouldn't have been able to buy him as Adrian, the evil Tony Stark.
Yeah. Yeah, he does a really great job in this movie, and he, you know, you're right. He makes it to where you want to be like, oh no, he didn't do that. That was just all Tom. Where you know he was maybe he made some mistakes in the past, but clearly he loves this woman, and you know Tom's been trying to string him along, and she's just overreacting to some stuff, and then he says surprise, and you go, oh no, I'm wrong. And now I want him to die.
Yep. And then you get that gratifying payoff.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, man, that, I mean, that's the, it's not the most cringy part of the movie, but they don't, there's no holds barred, right? Like they don't let up on that. And I thought that was, I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I agree. One other element of this movie that I don't think we've ever talked about in a film before, but I thought it worked. Architecture matters to me. I don't even know if you and I have talked about that as friends, but design matters in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think buildings should look like what's going on within them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good thing. This is going to sound really simplistic, but I think it's a good thing when schools have red brick and columns.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good thing when churches have steeples. And I hate modernist architecture.
Okay.
Which is, you know, concrete slabs, bare metal, basically Adrian's house.
Yeah.
But I thought it was brilliant to use a modernist architectural layout for his house because modernist architecture is cold and unfeeling and largely inhuman. nobody wants to live on a concrete slab, even though we're kind of all visually impressed by it when we see it, because we know it means basically money. It means you've got enough money. Yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to live on a marble slab and cuddle up to an exposed I-beam. You know,
sure,
what I'm saying?
Yeah. I want to live on a marble slab.
Yeah. I like marble too.
Yeah.
It was perfect, though, for the world that he had trapped her in.
Sure.
It had all the trappings of wealth, but it was cold, unfeeling, and inhuman. Mm. And I thought then contrast that with the house she goes to with the police guy and his daughter.
Yeah.
That is clearly a home. There's wood and drywall being painted and closets that don't look like secret passageways to the Batcave.
Right.
They did a really good job of using architecture and the contrast in homes to show us how stark her life with Adrian was and how wonderful it was she had found this new home with this family in a family home.
Mm-hmm. Well said, man. I that didn't even register in my mind, but that is a really good take.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. But if that stuff matters to me, and I notice it, and I thought that was just another skillful choice that Winnell made.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I never would have thought of that. And now that you bring it up, that's a really great point. And it really did. It really, the contrast was really good on that for sure. Did you know, that this was supposed to be part of the, dark universe that they were trying to build with, the mummy?
No, I did not. But man, I'm still bummed that dark universe didn't come together.
As am I. So I guess once they realized that the mummy sucked at the box office, Blumhouse took this thing and reimagined it. But this originally was supposed to have Johnny Depp in it as the Invisible Man.
Really?
Yeah, which part of me is really bummed about, because I think Johnny Depp could have done a really good job with like an updated take on the 1930s Invisible Man.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm happy that we got this movie. Don't get me wrong, but I am really bummed out that the plans for the dark universe are gone now.
There's so much there. So one, you know, it's weird that the Invisible Man is really distinct from the Universal Monsters.
Yes.
You know, he's not a mutant or a vampire or a creation made from undead bodies. Body parts have been harvested, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a dude, and he got like a version of a superpower. In fact, there's a lot of superheroes who have that power. In the original, am I right that they kind of imply that the chemicals he's taken have driven him crazy?
Yes.
So that's the closest you get to like anything other than this guy's just making terrible choices to use this again, you know, use his newfound abilities against people.
Right.
But he's really interesting in that way. He's just a guy who's given into the basest part of his nature.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to see more in this vein. I mean, I would take a schlocky sequel where this technology falls into someone else's hands. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I went back and read the Wikipedia synopsis for the 1933 movie, and everything from the Wikipedia article makes it sound like it's not rapey.
Right.
He tries to take over the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you could do a lot with a guy who wants to, like, take over the corporate world and become the wealthy, like to basically become Adrian. You mm-hmm. know?
Well, you could even do a direct sequel to this and have Elizabeth Moss be, I mean, cause she's so, I guess we need to talk about this anyway, but I kind of felt like she went over the edge at the end of that movie. And I feel like that James feels that way too, because like he realizes, oh, she killed him.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that Adrian doesn't deserve it, but it was also kind of like, man, did you go too far? And
no, I'm honest, man. I'm on team slit his throat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if he's going to keep coming at you and he literally has magic tech, what else can you do?
Sure.
And he's already attacked. You know, he's clearly willing to attack that little girl.
Well, that was Tom.
Well, but I mean, it's under Adrian's.
Well, but the slap could have been Adrian.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, Adrian wasn't telling Tom, don't attack the girl.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
It was clearly Tom acting under, at Adrian's behest.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, maybe that's too medieval of me, but I was like, yeah, dude, this guy's got to die.
Right. I don't think you're wrong in that. I felt for James in that situation where I was like, okay, if I'm the detective, if I'm the cop and I'm supposed to uphold the law, yet I know that my friend has clearly broken the law, regardless of how justified it may be, how am I going to feel in that situation? I really don't think that you're wrong. I do think that you're right in the fact that, like, Adrian, that was the only way to get rid of him, was to get rid of him. But I could also see a part of this where, like, Elizabeth Moss has been driven to the brink of insanity.
Sure.
And now she's going to use that suit to, like, you know, take over the world or extract revenge or whatever the situation may be.
Stuff that she thinks is unjust. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. You could even make, like, go in a vigilante type, you know, situation with it. I think it would be a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would watch those, and they might get schlocky, but I'd watch them, because I just think this movie was, there was some meat left on the bone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now the last thing, and I want to tread super lightly here, but I mean, do you keep up with the news about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard?
Man, I a little bit, not as much. I was going to say not as much as I should, but I don't really feel like I should keep up with much celebrity news. But anyway, tell me what you want to say.
It would just be super close to home for him to be in this movie.
Okay. Well, go ahead.
You know, for the longest time, the narrative was Amber Heard was abused deeply by Johnny Depp.
Right.
And that may entirely be the case. Okay. So I'm not trying to adjudicate the issue here. But then, like, within the last year, a bunch of data has come out from Depp's defense team saying, no, actually, Amber was abusing him and using our assumptions about how men treat women against him to actually end up being the abuser against Johnny.
Yeah.
And so if that's what Johnny believes was the nature of his relationship with Amber Heard, if that turned out in reality to be the nature of it, for him to be the guy playing a guy who was gaslighting a woman and abusing her and using cultural assumptions against her would be meta in a way that, like, I don't know if my brain could handle it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that Johnny Depp was supposed to be in this version of the movie.
I think
that there was a version of this movie that ties into the Dark Order universe or whatever they were going to call it. And it was going to be more like the old Universal Monster movies.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I don't think that was the case. And I think that once The Mummy tanked, as bad as it did, which, by the way, I know that we mentioned this before, but Ryan George just came out with a new pitch meeting on The Mummy.
Uh-huh.
And dude, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check that out for sure.
Yeah. Which I'm a big Ryan George fanboy anyway, but I just thought it was hilarious. And honestly, it made me want to watch the movie just because of how stupid it sounds, just how stupid he makes it sound.
Uh-huh.
I just want to see if it's as dumb as it really, as he makes it out to be.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, so I think that it was supposed to be more in that vein. And then once they realized, oh, we're not going to make any money off this, Blumhouse took it and ran with it from there and reimagined it as something else. Because once they got rid of the Dark Universe aspects of it, I think Armie Hammer was actually in talks to play Adrian, which is, I mean, that's the same archetype, right?
Uh-huh. That would have worked.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I am here for another version of Invisible Man that doesn't immediately go to rape. Like,
right.
If they want to come back to this and say, here's a guy who's going to take over the world, become a corporate raider, become a vigilante and go too far, just, bring it on. I'm ready to watch that.
Yeah, I agree. I would do that as well. I would also love to see Johnny Depp tackle this thing as, like, the old 1930s Invisible Man.
Yeah, a man driven mad by his experiments.
Yeah.
100%.
Which I kind of feel like that we've had that with Johnny Depp anyway, with that god-awful movie.
Lawnmower Man recreation thing.
Yeah. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, he uploads his consciousness.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally do. I can't remember what it was called, but yeah.
Gus or something like that. That's not right. what was it called? Transcendence.
There you go, baby. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. I was so excited about that movie because Wally Pfister was the director on it.
Uh-huh.
And Wally Pfister was Nolan's DP on all of his movies for the longest time.
Really?
And so I just remember being like, oh, well, if Wally Pfister's going to do it, it's going to wind up being a good movie. And Johnny Depp's in it. And, like, I think, like, wasn't Marion Cotillard in it or something?
Mm-hmm. She's awesome. Yeah.
Rebecca Hall. That's who it was. I'm sorry.
Rebecca Hall's really good, too.
Yeah.
Top shelf talent.
Yeah. Like, so Johnny Depp, Rebecca Hall, Morgan Freeman, Cillian Murphy are the first four people that are on the IMDb page of Transcendence.
That's a lot of talent, man. That is a lot of talent.
And it was a crap movie.
Yeah. And, you know, the original Lawnmower Man was pretty good. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like Blumhouse could, I don't know, they can do better.
Yeah.
But speaking of Blumhouse doing better, I think they made this thing, this Invisible Man movie, for like $7 million, which was mostly probably CGI. Filling out Adrian's house.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then a little bit left on CGI. And I think it's made 56 the last time I checked. So Blumhouse continues to show the world how it's done.
Yeah, for the most part. For the most part, they're doing really well.
Well, what I mean by that, you're right. It is for the most part. Not every one of their movies hits.
Yeah.
But as we've talked about, they make, you know, three movies for the cost of one. And it may, you know, one of the three is the only thing you need to hit.
Right.
So then they've got money to make the next three. And it's a I don't know. It's just an impressive, it's an impressive approach in my eyes.
Yeah, no, I agree. So the budget was $7 million. The domestic gross on it currently is $33 million and some change. And the worldwide gross is $53.8 million.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
They will keep making horror movies with that money. And I'm thankful.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, buddy, I think I've emptied my bag out on The Invisible Man, but it was a treat to watch.
Yeah, man, I really enjoyed it. I was skeptical about it, and then I started to see like a lot of really good reviews come through. And a matter of fact, one of our Saw Something Scary listeners, Lexi, she posted about it, and so that got me fired up to see it. And despite the two drunk girls that were by me at the theater, it was really good. It was nice to use my season pass for a movie that I enjoyed rather than something that I hate watched.
Indeed. And it was nice to see a movie that was better than the experience that I have to have watching it at AMC. So
yeah,
thank you in multiple ways, Blumhouse.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's ask the questions, my man. Did we see something scary?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think I definitely saw something scary.
Yeah.
That concept, just the idea of an invisible threat, somebody who does this to women, which doesn't require like invisibility tech. And then that scene of her pouring paint on Adrian or Tom from the ceiling was all awesome. I thought it was really well done.
Yeah. And even to like, for me, there was real life scares with when Tom finally reveals it, like he's still alive. You know, that scene where Tom gets real skeezy.
Mm-hmm.
I remember thinking like, man, you know, not to this extent, but there are women out there that have to deal with situations like that. Mm-hmm. And my God, that just has to be the most terrifying thing in the world. So on all fronts, man, we definitely saw something scary.
I agree entirely.
On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rank this?
Man, yeah, this isn't the best thing ever. I probably can't get away from like seeing it in the context of Brahms and The Turning, but I feel like this movie was a 7.
Yeah, I actually would rank it 7.5.
Okay, yeah. So then, I don't know if maybe we're both being influenced, but this is a really satisfying movie, and there's not a lot to critique.
Right.
She probably gets shot when she's in the parking lot.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of a plot hole. But other than that. You know, hiding the other suit. There's just a lot that, like, the movie is tight. The script is tight, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that, man. There were a couple of things that popped up where I was like, oh, that doesn't seem plausible. But we're also dealing with a movie where a man is invisible. So you got to suspend your disbelief a little bit. And the thing that I think I've noticed in the 3 years that we've been doing this movie is, like, my critic hack has come out a lot more, but I've also learned that, like, in movies, you've got to suspend your disbelief a little bit, and you've got to think that, like, some things are coincidence and they just have to line up so that the movie happens.
Yeah.
And I think I think the best movies are when those coincidences line up and you don't really think about it until you have to do something like this where you're trying to dissect the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we are with this movie.
I think that's really fair. My family's version of this is sometimes I'll say to my wife, why would that character do that? And she'll laugh and she'll say, because it's in the script.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's plot armor. That's what it takes.
Exactly. You know, again, going back to pitch meeting, there's a lot of things between the writer and the studio executive where he's like, well, why is this happening? And the writer goes, because I need it for the movie. And the guy's like, fair enough. So just sometimes that's what has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's accurate. So we're at a scary movie that's a 7. I mean, it's been a good week in terms of movies. It's been a bad week, everything else, but
yeah,
good movie finally.
Yeah. Yeah. At least we finally got to come on our, on our regular channel here and dissect a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Speaking of which, though, if you would like to hear our review of Parasite, and in that review, I think I can speak for Jeff when I say this, Jeff and I get very personal. We go farther down both of our personal lives than we ever have here on the free one. If that's something that you're interested in, or if you just want to hear our thoughts on Parasite, join Patreon for as little as $3 a month. You can get that bonus episode plus the backlog of other bonus episodes that we've had. $3 a month gets you that stuff. So patreon.com/scarypodcast. We would love for you to subscribe if you haven't. If this is your first time seeing us because maybe you wanted to hear a review on the Invisible Man, thank you, number one, for listening. But number two, subscribe, man. Hit that 5 stars. Get us out there more in the world and let more people be able to hear our review. And of course, if you want to join the conversation, hit our Facebook group, We Saw Something Scary, and let us know what you thought about this movie. Let us know what you think about the upcoming trailers that we're going to put up there, Psycho Gorman, Saint Maud, and whether or not they're going to be on your radar in the not so distant future. Anything else?
No, man, I think that's covered it. Thanks for knocking all that out.
Yeah, of course, man. That's what I do. He's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. We are out of time. Thank you guys so much for listening, as always. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of the show. But until then, Jeff and Derek want to remind you to stay away from clowns in sewers, white people with teacups, and blind men with turkey basters. We'll see you guys back here next week. Bye-bye, man.